Joe, I said, let's go get breakfast. We walked fast and aimlessly. We turned into the Rue Saint-Dominique and passed by two cafes at the top of Rue de l'Exposition without stopping. We crossed the Avenue Bosquet against the light, and then we made an arbitrary left into the Rue Jean-Nicot. Joe stopped at a tobacco and bought cigarettes. I would have smiled if I'd been able to. The street was named after the guy who discovered nicotine. We lit up together on the sidewalk and then ducked into the first cafe we saw. We were all done walking. We were ready for the talking. You shouldn't have waited for me, Joe said. You could have seen her one last time. I felt it happen, I said. Midnight, last night, something hit me. You could have been with her. Too late now. It would have been okay with me. It wouldn't have been okay with her. We should have stayed a week ago. She didn't want us to stay, Joe. That wasn't in her plan. She was an individual, entitled to her privacy. She was a mother, but that wasn't all she was. He went quiet. The waiter brought us coffee and a small straw basket full of croissants. He seemed to sense the mood. He put them down gently and backed away. Will you see to the funeral, I said. He nodded. I'll make it 4 days from now. Can you stay? No, I said, but I'll get back. Okay, he said. I'll stay a week or so. I guess I'll need to find her will. We'll probably have to sell her place, unless you want it. I shook my head. I don't want it. You? I don't see how I could use it. It wouldn't have been right for me to go on my own, I said. Joe said nothing. We saw her last week, I said. We were all together. It was a good time. You think? We had fun. That's the way she wanted it. That's why she made the effort. That's why she has to go to Polydor. It wasn't like she ate anything. He just shrugged. We drank our coffee in silence. I tried a croissant. It was okay, but I had no appetite. I put it back in the basket. Life, Joe said. What a completely weird thing it is. A person lives 60 years, does all kinds of things, knows all kinds of things, feels all kinds of things, and then it's over. Like it never happened at all. We'll always remember her. No. We'll remember parts of her, the parts she chose to share, the tip of the iceberg. The rest only she knew about. Therefore, the rest already doesn't exist, as of now. We smoked another cigarette each and sat quiet. Then we walked back, slowly, side by side. A little burned out, at some kind of peace. The coffin was in the Corbillard when we got back to her building. They must have stood it upright in the elevator. The concierge was out on the sidewalk, standing next to the old man with the metal ribbon. He was leaning on his walking sticks. The nurse was there, too, standing on her own. The pallbearers had their hands clasped in front of them. They were looking down at the ground.
They are taking her to the dépôt mortuaire, the nurse said.
The funeral parlor. Okay, Joe said. I didn't stay. I said goodbye to the nurse and the concierge and shook hands with the old guy. Then I nodded to Joe and set off walking up the avenue. I didn't look back. I crossed the Seine at the Pont de l'Alma and walked up the Avenue Georges V to the hotel. I went up in the elevator and back to my room. I still had the old guy's box under my arm. I dropped it on the bed and stood still, completely unsure about what to do next. I was still standing there 20 minutes later when the phone rang. It was Calvin Franz calling from Fort Irwin in California. He had to say his name twice. The first time, I couldn't recall who he was. I spoke to Marshall, he said. Who? You're 12 Corps guy. I said nothing. You okay? Sorry, I said. Yeah, I'm fine. You spoke to Marshall. He went to Kramer's funeral. He drove Vassil and Coomer there and back. Then he claims he didn't drive them the rest of the day because he had important Pentagon meetings all afternoon. But? I didn't believe him. He's a gopher. If Vassil and Coomer had wanted him to drive, he'd have been driving, meetings or no meetings. And? And knowing what kind of a hard time you'd give me if I didn't check, I checked. And? Well, those meetings must have been with himself in the toilet stall because nobody else saw him around. So what was he doing instead? No idea, but he was doing something, that's for sure. The way he answered me was just way too smooth. I mean, this was all 6 days ago. Who the hell remembers what meetings they had 6 days ago? But this guy claims to. You tell him I was in Germany? He seemed to know already. You tell him I was staying there? You seem to take it for granted you weren't heading for California anytime soon. These guys are old buddies with Willard, I said. He's promised them he'll keep me away from them. He's running the 110th like it's Armored's private army. I checked those stories myself, by the way, for Vassil and Coomer, because you got me curious. There's nothing there to suggest either one of them ever heard of any place called Sperryville, Virginia. Are you sure? Completely. Vassil is from Mississippi and Coomer is from Illinois. Neither of them has ever lived or served anywhere near Sperryville. I was quiet for a second. Are they married? I said. Married? Fran said. Yes, there were wives and kids in there, but they were local girls, no in-laws in Sperryville. Okay, I said. So what are you going to do? I'm coming to California. I put the phone down and walked along the corridor to Summer's door. I knocked and waited. She opened up. She was back from sightseeing. She died last night, I said.
I know,
Summer said.
Your brother just called from the apartment. He wanted me to make sure you okay.
I'm okay, I said.
I'm very sorry.
I shrugged. Conceptually, these things don't come as a surprise.
When was it?
Midnight. She just gave up.
I feel bad. You should have gone to see her yesterday. You shouldn't have spent the day with me. We shouldn't have done all that ridiculous shopping.
I saw her last week. We had fun. Better that last week was the last time.
I would have wanted whatever extra time I could have gotten.
It was always going to be an arbitrary date, I said. I could have gone yesterday in the afternoon, maybe. Now I'd be wishing I'd stayed for the evening. If I'd stayed for the evening, I'd be wishing I'd stayed until midnight.
You were in here with me at midnight. I feel bad about that, too.
Don't, I said. I don't feel bad about it. My mother wouldn't either. She was French, after all. If she'd known those were my options, she'd have insisted.
You're just saying that.
Well, I guess she wasn't very broad-minded. But she always wanted whatever made us happy.
Did she give up because she was left alone?
I shook my head. She wanted to be left alone so she could give up. Summer said nothing. We're leaving, I said. We'll get a night flight back.
California?
East Coast first, I said. There are things I need to check.
What things?
She said. I didn't tell her. She would have laughed. And right then, I couldn't have handled laughter. Summer packed her bag and came back to my room with me. I sat on the bed and played with the string on Monsieur Lemonnier's box.
What's that?
She said. Something some old guy brought around. He said it's something that should be found with my mother's stuff.
What's in it?
I don't know.
So open it.
I shoved it across the counterpane. You open it. I watched her small, neat fingers work on the tight old knot. Her clear nail varnish flashed in the light. She got the string off and lifted the lid. It was a shallow box made out of the kind of thick, sturdy cardboard you don't see much anymore. Inside were three things. There was a smaller box, like a jewel case, It was made of a cardboard faced with dark blue watermarked paper. There was a book, and there was a cheese cutter. It was a simple length of wire with a handle on each end. The handles were turned from dark old wood. You could see a similar thing in any épicerie in France. Except this one had been restrung. The wire was too thick for cheese. It looked like piano wire. It was curled and corroded, like it had been stored for a very long time.
"What is it?"
Summer said. "Looks like a garrote," I said.
"The book's in French," she said. "I can't read it."
She passed it to me. It was a printed book with a thin paper dust jacket. Not a novel, some kind of a non-fiction memoir. The corners of the pages were foxed and stained with age. The whole thing smelled musty. The title was something to do with railroads. I opened it up and took a look. After the title page was a map of the French railroad system in the 1930s. The opening chapter seemed to be about how all the lines in the north squeezed down through Paris and then fanned out again to point south. You couldn't travel anywhere without transiting the capital. It made sense to me. France was a relatively small country with a very big city in it. Most nations did it the same way. The capital city was always the center of the spider web. I flipped to the end of the book. There was a photograph of the author on the back flap of the dust jacket. The photograph was of a 40 years younger Monsieur Lamonnier. I recognized him with no difficulty. The blurb underneath the picture said he'd lost both legs in the battles of May 1940. I recalled the stiff way he'd sat on my mother's sofa, and his walking sticks. He must have been using prosthetics, wooden legs. What I had assumed were bony knees must have been complicated mechanical joints. The blurb went on to say he'd built le chemin de fer humain, the human railroad. He'd been awarded the Resistance Medal by President Charles de Gaulle, and the George Cross by the British, and the Distinguished Service Medal by the Americans.
"What is it?"
Summer said. "Seems like I just met an old resistance hero," I said.
"What's it got to do with your mom?"
"Maybe she and this Lamonnier guy were sweethearts way back."
"And he wants to tell you and Joe about it? About what a great guy he was at a time like this? That's a little self-centered, isn't it?"
I read on a little more. Like most French books, it used a weird construction called the past historic tense, which was reserved for written stuff only. It made it hard for a non-native to read. And the first part of the story was not very gripping. It made the point very laboriously that trains incoming from the north disgorged their passengers at the Gare du Nord terminal, and if those passengers wanted to carry on south, they had to cross Paris on foot or by car or subway or taxi to another terminal like the Gare d'Austerlitz or the Gare de Lyon before joining a southbound train. "It's about something called the human railroad," I said, "except there aren't many humans in it so far." I passed the book to Summer, and she flipped through it again.
"It's signed,"
she said. She showed me the first blank page. There was an old faded inscription on it. Blue ink, neat penmanship. Someone had written, "A Béatrice de Pierre." To Beatrice from Pierre.
"Was your mother called Beatrice?"
Summer asked. "No," I said. "Her name was Josephine. Josephine Moutier, and then Josephine Reacher." She passed the book back to me.
"I think I've heard of the human railroad," she said. "It was a World War II thing. It was about a rescuing bomber crews that were shot down over Belgium and Holland. Local resistance cells scooped them up and passed them along a chain all the way down to the Spanish border. Then they could get back home and get back in action. It was important because trained crews were valuable. Plus, it saved people from years in a POW camp."
"That would explain Lamonnier's medals," I said. "One from each Allied government." I put the book down on the bed and thought about packing. I figured I would throw the Samaritaine jeans and sweatshirt and jacket away. I didn't need them. Didn't want them. Then I looked at the book again and saw that some of the pages had different edges from some of the others. I picked it up and opened it and found some half-tone photographs. Most of them were posed studio portraits, reproduced head and shoulders, six to a page. The others were clandestine action shots. They showed Allied airmen hiding in cellars, lit by candles placed on barrels, and small groups of furtive men dressed in borrowed peasant clothing on country tracks, and Pyrenean guides amid snowy mountainous terrain.